All right. Hi, everyone. We're back.
We're back.
Sorry, it's been a couple of weeks
Two
since,
week hiatus.
I've been in trouble getting together. But anyways, I'm Thomas.
I'm Sean.
Kelly.
And we're the po Common Ground Podcast. As usual, we're just here to talk about whatever interests us and talk like normal folks. Try to come to some common ground. This week, we're going to start talking about hobbies and specifically whether a good hobby needs to be a useful hobby. So, Sean, why don't you give us a little bit more
Yeah, so
detail?
what I'm thinking about, I think I had a conversation with Kelly about on this point, and I think when Kelly's talking about hobby, I might be mistaken, but like anytime you have a hobby, I think he likens it to having it to be a useful, productive hobby. Otherwise, the time being spent is not as nearly as good as it could be to improve yourself as a person. I feel like that's a lot of it. It always goes with improvement, where it's like if you're gonna pick a hobby, you should read a book, or you should pick working out, or you should pick like Taekwondo or martial arts or something to always improve yourself as a better person. And I remember we were talking in the car about one topic. Again, I could be mistaken. He'll chime in a second, but it's like we were talking about tap dancing, and we're like, should someone learn tap dancing if they want to? I mean, it's part of the genre of dance. You know, there's multiple different dances you can learn, and we're talking about on the totem pole, tap dancing is probably the lowest on the totem pole when it comes to usefulness. Is like, how many times do people want a tap dancer? If you're gonna go on Broadway, are you gonna be like the best tap dancer there is? Like, how much money is that gonna make you? And if it's something even worth pursuing, if it's not even like that good, you know? I'm of the opinion that if you like doing something, it's a hobby. It doesn't have to be useful. It should be good if you can if you want to do it, you know? Kelly, let me did I misinterpret some
Yes.
stuff? Okay, then that's fine.
The
That's
way
fine.
I think of it is
Okay.
that you can do any hobby you fucking want.
Okay.
You want to do tap dancing? Go fucking do tap dancing.
Okay.
But can it be a useless hobby? Yes, it can fucking can
Oh yeah,
be.
specifically.
If it's good for you and you feel like you like it, go ahead and do it. Who cares?
Okay.
Go knitting, go spin a pen. I don't care. I break danced back in high school. Sean, you
Yeah,
did too.
I did.
Fucking useless ass hobby. I regret my time doing it. 100%.
You regret your time doing it because why do you regret
Because
it?
it's useless.
Be
I'm
so.
now I when the last time I break danced was maybe at a wedding.
Right.
And it was just for funsies, and I probably could have done the same, just as good, if I didn't do any high school
So.
training.
So do you think there's, I feel like there's this common phrase that people like to tote around when they're on the other side, where they're like, time enjoyed is not time wasted. Do you like, and if it's with breakdancing, if you enjoyed the time that you had during when you were breakdancing in high school, if we could have both agreed it's a useless hobby since it didn't take us anywhere. But do you agree with that phrase where if it's time enjoyed, then it's a time isn't wasted?
Depends. I feel like my enjoyment factor could have been increased if I was doing something else.
Okay.
If I, and that's just me, right?
Right.
I did break dancing, in all honesty, kind of just to fit in with the crowd that we were hanging out with.
Yeah.
Kind of joined up, but it wasn't my thing. I have no rhythm. I fucking suck at it.
Yeah.
But I
Well,
kept doing it. And I think of it as if you enjoy a hobby, go ahead and do it. I don't care. But
Right.
are there useless hobbies? Damn straight there are.
There's some useless hobbies.
See,
Yeah.
I would argue differently, not from the sense of whether something's, I think every hobby can be useful in some way. Like, for example, breakdancing. It kind of teaches you to be more coordinated. It gives you a bit of a workout at the time. You learn to, socialize also. So those are all
Again,
benefits of the
you
hobby.
can find all these benefits, but I think there could have been a increased benefit on a different level. If I like for me, if instead of breakdancing, I went into wrestling and just focused primarily on that instead of quitting, I feel like I would have been a much better person from there.
Well,
And
but so that's, I guess the point is, I think it's almost like a combination of the two, right? Is like, if you're enjoying it, that's one part, and then is it useful is another part. And I would argue, yeah, there's different levels of usefulness. I would never say a hobby is completely useless. I think anything you kind of do with your time is gonna help you in some way, shape, or form. But there's different degrees, of course.
okay, so Tom, let's say someone wants to go stamp collecting, right? There's almost like, I feel like there's almost nothing you can gain from stamp collecting
Like,
other than you want to collect the stamps, right?
and if you find, again, if you find enjoyment from it, then that is enough reason where you should keep on doing it.
Okay,
Right? I'm not
but
telling you to stop stamp
okay,
collecting.
that's, yeah,
You
okay.
could keep go ahead, and if you enjoy it, keep going.
But just know that if you continue stamp collecting, that it's probably, it's not a waste of time because you enjoy it and it's something you like to pursue, but I kind of agree with Kelly. If you want it to be like, wow, I'm going to be the best stamp collector, and I guess you're trying to gain something from it.
Know your limits, right? Well, know where the limit of where the skill is going to take
you. Where's the stamp collecting going
to
go?
I like what you said, like, you want to be the best stamp collector. Do you necessarily need to be the stamp collector for it to be the best stamp collector?
No, but
for it to be useful, why make it a competition? Right. Let's just say you're getting skills out of it, researching different stamps. You're learning more about different types of stamps. Each stamp has a history behind it. Great. So now you have more
useless information.
Well, no, I mean, any information you gather, you know, whether it be about art or, you know, any like sports, if you don't play the sport, it's useless information, right? No, not necessarily. You can use it in social conversations. I use all different kinds of trivia in social conversations, and they're useful. You know what I mean? It's not...
If you start rattling off stamp information and trivia to me, I don't want to be in this conversation.
Maybe not rattling them off, but if it's appropriate for the conversation,
then it's stamp collecting.
I'm not a stamp collector. But that's
the idea, right? The whole idea is that if you find any enjoyment from it, go ahead. Feel free to. Do you. Enjoy yourself. It's your life. Live it. But do not assume that you are going to be this high level stamp collector, the world is gonna enjoy it, you're gonna get money from it, you're gonna get fame from it, or any of these other things.
All of my hobbies, I almost don't want it to be something that I do permanently, right?
Right.
Like, I'm an engineer, I don't really do engineering stuff as a hobby necessarily. I do golf, and golf, is that considered a useless sport? You know, I would say it's useless in the sense that I'm not like gaining a ton out of it, but you know, I'm learning to coordinate myself. I'm learning.
I think if you look hard enough, you could find a silver lining in anything. Yeah. When it goes to the stamp collecting, it's like, what if you were stamp collecting and then you ended up talking to someone and you're building up your social skills? You know, you could just transfer anything, whatever you're doing, to be like a benefit. You know,
right? So that's what I'm saying. It's not useless then, right? It's just
so nothing's useless then.
Yeah, that was my argument. Yeah,
there's nothing useless, and you can't use the word useless. Basically, what I'm saying.
Well, I think the argument originally was like, is there any useless hobbies? And I would say no. I'd say there's varying degrees of useless hobbies. I think collecting is more useless than.
Let's take that same argument that you have. There's always gonna be a silver lining. Give me something, anything in the world that's useless.
Absolutely. Oh, how about it's absolutely useless in the context of what it's being used for? So let's say like if we were at a stamp collecting convention, right? And a sports guy came up and he was talking about baseball and he was talking about all the statistics of baseball. It's like, this guy, he hit whatever, how many home runs in a game, right? In that context, it would be useless at a stamp collecting convention, right? So can something be completely useless in every facet of existence? I don't think so.
And I think that what you have to take is what is the most amount of scenarios that you'll be in where you could apply these skills that you've taken and bring it and transfer them over.
Right.
Can you apply stamp collecting?
I feel like every hobby, but then on the flip side, I think every hobby can be useless in a certain context.
Yes.
Yeah, right? Like, your breakdancing is not going to help you when you're at a museum.
100%. Right. Yeah, but that's what we're saying. I think what it means is that it very much depends on the scenario you're in, but I would say, let's just use like research skills versus stamp collecting. Research skills gonna be way more useful for you in a majority of scenarios opposed to stamp collecting and the information you gain from there.
Right.
Right? Now, which one will I say is more useless? I'm gonna go with stamp collecting. I'd rather have the other one in my mind. But here's the thing, and it kind of goes back to all the things. If you find something you love, don't be ashamed of not doing it.
Yeah. So the thing that matters most, I guess, when it comes to hobby is enjoyment. If you enjoy it, all other factors, as long as it's not hurting anybody, if you enjoy all other factors is secondary, including usefulness, right? Mm. So the number one thing is if you enjoy it, because that's what a hobby should be. A hobby should be something you enjoy, right?
Right.
So it'd be great if it was also useful, but it's not necessary or everything. Okay, we agree on that. Okay,
and I think that it is like, if other people say that's useless, you know...
They're just kind of assholes for saying that.
No, I think
if you go up to a tap dancer and it's their life's work, and it's like, I've been going on Broadway, and I've been tap dancing, you know? And let's say Broadway doesn't bring that much money, right? It doesn't bring that much esteem, it doesn't bring that much money, it's just whatever. It could be tapping, it could be anything. But if you go up to this person saying like, what you're doing right now is useless, and wouldn't that be an asshole thing?
But you're trying to translate their hobby into like an aspiration. Let's just say they do it for fun,
okay,
and then someone comes up and says,
what you do for fun is pointless. What if I said, Tom,
that would be dick. I agree.
But I think at the same time, if you were them, I think you have to go into it understanding what is the usefulness of this hobby, whatever it is that you're doing, right?
Right.
And if I was a stamp collector, I would understand, hey, this is kind of useless, but I love it.
Yeah,
I don't
you care. Enjoy it.
I don't, yeah, but yeah. I don't care, right? Yeah. I at that point, I do it because I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Nothing more. I understand that it can be viewed as a useless thing, and I understand both sides.
Okay,
I will still continue
that's
doing
it. That's the rational idea.
Yeah, that's the idea. I think that good, you got to understand that whatever hobbies you do, that there may be some type of like negative factor behind it. You can't just look at it and be like, this is the best thing ever.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
so
oh, yeah.
useful
yeah.
to me. Best thing in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I think then a large majority of hobbies fall into that category.
Yes,
say,
it should
like,
be. Because that's, yeah. that's what a hobby essentially is, right? It's
right.
just it's, pointless enjoyment.
Yeah. So I guess I don't see what's bad about being called a useless hobby.
I never said that.
I feel like
he's not saying that.
No, I know.
But we agree it's addicting to say, is it addicting to say it's useless?
I think if I had to compare two things, and if you were, Sean, you were an incredible tap dancer.
I'm a incredible
and
tap dancer.
Tom is amazing golfer, let's just say. I would have, and if I were to compare them, I would be like, Tom or Sean, tap dancing is more useless than golfing in my eyes.
I almost put them on the same plane at that point.
Right? I don't know. Well, again,
that's a fair statement.
The only reason why I would put golf over stamp collecting is because golfing, you get really good. You get money.
Master.
You be Tiger Woods.
You have to stop like trying to translate the hobby into something that's like
tangible.
Like monetary
then
or something.
What is useful then?
Yeah. That's my argument, right? Is that no? I would say no hobby is necessarily useless, but every hobby kind of can be useless in a different context. Like my golfing skills are not going to help me in other places, right? But it's a hobby that's not useless. It's not that I'm just.
It's more useless.
I would say take out the enjoyment factor as being a useful thing, right? Like, let's say it adds usefulness that it's like I'm enjoying it. But it's just like every hobby in general, I would say, gives you skills, right? I would argue some give less.
Varying degrees
right.
of skills.
So
varying
skills. But if that means that there's a varying degree, then that means some are more useless than others.
I agree. I 100% agree.
Nothing
that
is zero.
No, there's no equal. Every hobby is equal. I agree. Picking up different martial arts, I feel, is way more useful than golf.
But then that's the thing. Other people will look at it and be like, how many times are you fighting someone compared to how many times you can go out on golf or the connections you build while doing golf?
Mm-hmm.
You don't prepare to fight for one. Okay, you're preparing your entire life to fight one fight, typically, right? Most people don't even get in a fight in their life,
right.
Which is fine. Be good. Don't get in a fight. So I can look at it and be like, hey, golfing is way more useful. I'm going to gain way more from that. I'm going to use it on a more regular basis. It just depends on how the way you look at it. But I don't think that there shouldn't be a term, like you can't use the word useless for hobbies because it has some type of usefulness, right? In this certain case, in this scenario. No, I'm going to be like, hey, I feel like that is useless to me.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think that is more useless than this other hobby.
See, I think you're just throwing around the word useless as like, it's not a hobby I would enjoy. There's like more like,
I find less uses for that hobby. Not even that I enjoy it. I can really enjoy stamp collecting, but I can definitely look at it and be like, this is a pretty useless thing, right? I have to admit, stamp collecting probably not going to help me out as much. Just in general.
Yeah.
But I enjoy
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Who cares? Mm-hmm. I'm going to still do it.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, there is some point to say, because I've never thought of, like, stamp collecting as a hobby, even though I 100% agree it is one. Right? It's just when I think of hobbies, it didn't pop in my head at first. So when you brought that up, that was a good point. That did kind of change my calculus before going into this. In the terms of, like...
You never thought collecting?
Yeah.
Well, I never... It didn't... It's not that I don't agree when you said it. It's just like if you said like name off some hobbies, it wouldn't have been one that I would have named off right away. Does that make sense?
I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
yeah.
Not saying that it's not a hobby. I agree. Yeah. But
pen spinning. Have you seen those Kuma films on YouTube? No. This is harkening way back.
I remember the Kuma films of like breakdancing and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, no,
exactly.
Do
they do pen spinning also?
Yes. Yeah. So it's weird because it's like a YouTube channel called Kuma, and they just go around doing a bunch of like they film people who are super talented. These guys are talented.
Cool.
Not gonna lie, they could do breakdancing really well. They have those weird like one wheel skate.
The monoline skates, whatever.
Super crazy and it's really cool to look at. Pen spinning's on there. Top spinning is another one. a lot of it's kind of useless. Yeah, probably, I won't lie. I don't. Probably. I'm sorry. Yeah, the pen spinning dudes. I don't know. You're not gonna apply.
But it's fun. It's cool.
But yeah, it's fun. It's cool. And it's cool to watch when you get you see high level people do this stuff, and you're like, wow, dude takes this wooden top, it's spinning, throws it, and lands on a fucking totem pole like 15 feet in the sky, and it's still spinning. And that's their hobby. That's they go, safe. They get together and they play that.
That's a game. If that's what you want to do, then that's what you want to do.
It's crazy. But okay. Yeah, and definitely worth a check out if you want to see.
Sure.
Those are good videos.
Yeah. All right, let's pivot to another topic. I know you guys had more that you wanted to discuss over here. We're hitting a good 15-minute mark.
Well, let's do current events. So one of the big stories that recently came out was regarding that journalist or reporter that went into a Saudi consulate and never came out. He disappeared. And I mean, Kelly, you have more details than I do. I
also am also on Thomas's train here. The train is going nowhere. I don't know anything about this thing. I know very little about it other than what Tom and Kelly just talked about.
Okay, it's fine. It's just, so what happened? It is a journalist, a Saudi Arabian journalist. His name is, I'm probably gonna pronounce it completely wrong. It's Jamal Khashoggi.
We'll call him Jamal then.
Let's go with Khashoggi.
Mr. Khashoggi.
Yeah, Khashoggi. So I think most outlets are covering that. So Khashoggi is a Saudi Arabian journalist, been with Saudi Arabia for a long period of time, covering crazy stories for the last like 20 years. Left the Saudi Arabian government, was an advisor for them, saying that the government there is too dictatorship, and he doesn't like the path that's going in. Left there, I believe he went to the United States, but he's currently in Turkey. Fast forward to now, he was going to marry his new Turkish wife, but needed to go to the Saudi Arabian consulate to get the paper, like divorce papers for his other wife in Saudi Arabia. Kind of, I have no idea what that part is all about. Mm-hmm. Went in, his Turkish wife is waiting outside, he never comes out. The next day, she comes back to the same spot, never comes out. So she files a claim to the Turkish police and whatnot. They get in contact with the Saudi Arabian consulate. And it's just funny because the Saudi Arabian consulate is like, well, yeah, he left. Look at this. Look, our cameras aren't working.
Yeah, no, so that's one thing I was about to ask. If you're in like any governmental building, I'm assuming that they would have 24/7 cameras, at least of the lobby, right? Like
they technically should have cameras on every exit.
Right.
They're like, and their argument is like, hey, he didn't, you know, he's gone. He left. Look at this. And no, you're not allowed in. And then afterwards, like, yeah, you're allowed in, but you're not actually allowed in.
What do you mean by that?
They just go back and forth. They're just kind of arguing back and forth.
Okay.
And Turkish government's kind of essentially jumping to the worst case scenario. They're like, he was killed. He was straight up killed. This is allegations from the Turkish government.
Okay.
That Saudi Arabia killed him, dismembered him, and took him off site. And they have an idea of the van that took him out. So they have a plate of the van.
Dismembered. Why do they think dismembered?
Because they needed to get that body out. Oh, and actually,
To do it is chop them up.
Yeah, and I found out earlier today, apparently, I don't know, is, I already forgot, Jamal Khashoggi.
Yeah.
I think he had an Apple Watch on or something. And they're saying that he filmed it. So while he was being killed. So he turned it on filming it. So they have them torturing and killing him.
Oh, so this is, they have, there's video evidence.
I don't know.
Is it on the internet?
I don't know if it's true. I don't know if it's on the internet. I didn't look too much into it. I heard that that was what's happening. And apparently Turkish government, even beforehand, said that they had very concrete evidence saying that that is true. That that's what happened.
Plus, wasn't there video of him entering? So it's kind of weird that there's no video
there's
exiting.
There's videos of him entering and his wife staying outside.
Yeah. And then, I heard the same thing, that there's audio and visual footage of them torturing and killing him.
Okay, so I mean, if there is video of that, and it doesn't have to be on the internet, but if it's somewhere there, if a lawyer has it, they have evidence of that, we could say alleged all we want, but we can at least confirm that there's fucking evidence that he's being tortured.
We don't know.
And killed. So the only, I mean, assuming the reason why he got tortured and killed is because he was criticizing the government, right?
Yeah. A lot of it was that he was going to leave, and they were saying like he's going to criticize the government.
Oh, he's going to criticize the government from outside.
Or I think he already even did criticize the
government. And like once he's in Turkish, like you can't like extradite him. You can't like.
No.
You
so can't, they wait for him to
get inside the consulate because now that's their territory.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like if he's free in Turkey, he's going to talk shit in Turkey this whole time. We can't touch him.
See, I heard crazy things like there's evidence that there's like 15 known like hitmen who were on like a flight to Turkey and they were like supposed to be targeting him. Like, there's all, like, it's pretty wild what they're saying.
That's a little conspiracy. Yeah. But I mean, like, maybe I wouldn't put it past them, but it's like, how would we know about that, right?
Right.
What the hard evidence is that we have video and we have pictures and we have audio that he got fucked up and tortured in the, maybe in the consulate, right?
The funny thing is that the Turkish forensics people, or at least the government,
they have the body?
No, they're saying like, hey, if we get access into this consulate, we know the exact room and the next room they brought into the seminarium and the room they've used to transport.
Oh, they could like investigate.
Well, they already said that they know the rooms. So they just need entrance in and then they could let their teams go through.
But they can't because it's in other countries.
I feel like the Turkish government has some type of info. Mm-hmm. They either had the audio and video beforehand. They had some type of tracking. I don't understand it. But before any like confirmed concrete video was out, they were saying that already. They're like, hey, let us in and we could tell you which room it happened.
But they can't invade another country, quote unquote. Yeah.
The Saudi,
yeah, because it's their, yeah, it's their place.
So it goes around and around. Government, United. Now, what's happening and why it kind of involves us now, we're getting pulled in, is that there is a growing sentiment within, I would say, more leaning towards the left side in Senate, who's pushing for us to kind of step up and get in there. They made it clear that this is not anything against Trump, okay?
So, yeah, wait, why are we involved in the slightest?
Well, the reason...
We are big allies with the Saudis.
Are we?
Yes.
Yes, we are big. They are... And this is where it kind of gets a little bit funky, is that the Senate, and again, I think one thing that they were trying to reaffirm is like, yes, this is coming a lot from like the more liberal side, but this is nothing against Trump. We just want to know. We want to put into place the ability for us to intervene if we need to.
Mm-hmm.
So they pushed through a bill saying like, hey, let's look into this. Let's get what's going on. Nothing against you, just that we want to make sure that this is being upheld, even though it's happening in Turkey. So what are we going to do about it? Well, are we going to cut our arms deal? That's the big question with Saudi Arabia. They count for one of the largest arms deals we have. Like,
yeah.
Very high.
Like a lot of money. $10 billion or something.
Like a lot of money.
Stupid amount. And I think Trump so far has said that he wants to intervene and check things out, but he hasn't confirmed anything about the arms deal. He says like that's a big
it's a super dicey situation, because although like just on a moral level, if there was no other factors at play, 100% we should be intervening, right? Like, or like we should be investigating, or we should find the truth, right? But it's hard when you think about the ramifications for punishing the Saudis side, because they do provide, like, you know, they do help a lot with maintaining peace in the Middle East. Turkey is kind of like a proxy state for Iran in a way, and Iran's not super friendly. Like, there's things like that. So it makes it a much more dicey situation, right? So you can't just like go ahead and say like, oh yeah, we should, you know, intervene right away. It's not like a clear cut answer.
The thing about Saudi Arabia for me is that they've done sketchy
shit.
Yeah. Multiple times. And I mean, or even then the idea was like, why do we trade so much arms with these guys? Yeah. And a lot of it does come down to, we need the money, right?
They also need the money. But again, they are helping in fighting like ISIS and stuff like that.
Yeah, but they are also hurting in other ways. So yes, they provide benefits. I'm not going to lie. They do provide some benefit, but they've done terrible things.
Absolutely.
Both within
not
their
a
country,
question, yeah.
Outside of the country, and we are supplying them weapons to do so.
Yeah.
So
it is a very, very dicey situation.
Wait, when did this happen, by the way?
Like
last week. With the journalist.
Yeah. Last week?
With the journalist, yeah.
Yeah.
Still going on. And today was when I heard that the video came out, or video was found.
Oh,
I heard like a couple days ago, but yeah, no, essentially. So yeah, it's a really shitty situation for the United States to be in. It's like,
I almost feel like it's not that shitty. It's shitty that it happened, and I know they're our ally, but it's like, how involved are we supposed to be in other people's affairs, even if they are our ally?
But it's just a human rights issue.
Okay.
And I think the idea is that this guy is... It has helped us. Like, he lives in the United States.
Oh, the journalist?
Because I think, if I remember right, yeah, he left Saudi Arabia and lives in the United States.
Oh, for a little bit?
Yeah.
He's not a citizen, right?
I don't think he's a citizen, but he lives in the United States, and he helped us out on multiple times, especially during, like, when we started entering the Middle East. He was an intel advisor, I think. Yeah. Or at the very least, he was just a journalist that was kind of helping us with information. Mm-hmm. So I would say he is seen as an ally.
Okay, let's think of like what's the resulting things that happen. Let's say it's true, and let's say the video evidence proves it, and, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, that Saudi Arabia did this. They committed the crime. Mm-hmm. They tortured him. They killed him. They dismembered him. They did it.
No doubt.
Let's say they did it. What should we do as... What should the U.S. do? Do you think we should go there? Or, I mean, not should go there. Should we break up a trade deal? Should we punish them in some way? Mm-hmm. Should we not consider them an ally anymore?
Yeah. I think that we should... That we have to. I don't even think that we should. I think we would have to punish them because I don't think it's...
We're going to punish them, but what? Still be friends? Like, we're like, hey, we're going to stop this deal. But in 10 years from now, we'll deal up again.
Yeah, I don't think you can completely cut off ties, but you have to have some kind of ramification saying, like, this was not okay. We have to punish in some way, shape, or form. But I wouldn't say complete cutting off Saudis. Like, you know, saying, like, you know, we're never dealing with them. They're our enemy now. Because I think that would cause way more catastrophic damage. But in terms of like doing nothing, absolutely not. I think something does need to be done, especially if the evidence is out. You know what I mean? I don't think we can slap them on the wrist. There has to be something done.
And that would be the trade deal or anything else?
I don't know about the trade deal. I don't know if cutting the trade deal, like, you know, reducing it, or imposing other sanctions or something, but something would have to be done. What do you think?
I have no idea what can be done. I think that we have to call them out on it, though, at the very least.
No matter what.
I see it as anytime we sweep things under the rug, and this happened before with the Japanese treatment of essentially Chinese prisoners, where we kind of swept it under the rug, say, hey, come work with us. And then another country comes down and say, like, hey, these guys did a lot of terrible shit. And we're not going to look past that. This is a human rights issue. If this is falling into that category, and I believe it does, we need to call it out and say, hey, this is not something that we accept. We will do something against it. And, try not to do it again. I think we should do things such as sanctions or cutting off trades, or at least weaning it down. Because right now, we can't... I just don't like the idea of us even trading with them in general. If we know that they are 40, 50% or something, they're like shit ton of money, and we're so reliant on them that they could do whatever they want, and we just can't. We can't just say, like, oh, we gotta cut ties. Because at some point or another, we have to say, we will cut ties.
Yeah, that is an important part that I heard about, where we can't make it seem like they need us or we need them more than they need us. Mm. So if we don't do anything and this comes out, that looks really, it makes America look very weak. Oh. And this, you know, like then the Saudis feel like they can just run roughshod because it's like, oh, well, US needs us. We can do whatever we want and they'll just look the other way. So that's what I'm saying, is that we have to do something to show that, like, you know, we're the ones kind of quote unquote in charge or whatever, or, you know, at least that we don't need you as much as you need us. But we can't say that we're going to just completely cut off ties because I think that there would be even more damage as a result.
You know, I'm down for that. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's kind of, there's like a cost benefit to it, but there has to be something.
Well, I think that's partially how, like, ISIS and just more conflict in the Middle East was started, because we were funding one side, and then, you know, things got out of hand. We were funding Saddam Hussein, weren't we?
Before he went crazy.
But then by then he went crazy, and he already had tons of tanks, tons of military.
Yeah, that was kind of like just a bad gamble, right? Like we were trying to. I can't remember. I don't know. I'm not an expert in like Middle East, affairs, but my general understanding was there was a lot of really oppressive dictatorships in like the 70s, and so we wanted to try toppling some of them, and so we gave guns to what we thought were rebels leaders, like, you know, people who shared our interests, and then some of those turned crazy, like Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein, and so that caused a ton of problems. And then I would say ISIS grew more so as a result of us pulling out of the region, more so than us being in the region.
I think it's a little bit of both.
Maybe,
funded it, and once we pull out, that's going to be an issue too.
Yeah, I mean, because ISIS never became like a real thing until Obama pulled us out, from what I remember.
No, they were there during Obama's administration. They just got
They were there during Obama's administration, but they weren't there during Bush's administration, for example.
They were starting to when Bush's administration went through and started doing it. They started the ISIS started being created. It didn't just happen because Obama went through.
I'm more saying about when we pulled out, there became a vacuum, and ISIS filled that vacuum.
Yeah, but if it wasn't ISIS, it would have been someone else. And
maybe, yeah.
And the idea is that ISIS, I see ISIS as it hasn't been an influential factor for there for basically since we started in there. So they existed, I think.
Well, and it was, no, it was, see, that's what I'm saying is I would argue that ISIS was not at least a formal thing for sure until after we pulled out. Before there was like Al-Qaeda, there was
no, Al-Qaeda partnered with ISIS. Al-Qaeda and Taliban partnered with ISIS, and until they were like, dude, these guys are fucking insane, and then even they pulled out of ISIS. ISIS was an existing factor.
But was it a non-existing factor? Like it was like it existed, but it wasn't like as big as it became in like 2010 to 2012.
Roughly. I don't know if you're trying to cast blame on Obama. The organization existed for a long period of time. They took over, and once we pulled out, I agree. We pulled out,
and they filled up. Yeah, like they became bigger. They became a formal force.
But if it wasn't ISIS, no, they were a formal force beforehand. Is anytime we pull out,
right,
someone's going to take over.
Right.
Who's it going to be?
Right.
Shut up. Is it going to be us or an ally, or is it going to be the enemy?
Right.
In this case, it became the enemy. If it wasn't going to be ISIS, it was going to be Al-Qaeda. If it was going to be, it wasn't Al-Qaeda, it was going to be the Taliban. Something or another. Fuck, it couldn't even be Russia. Who knows? ISIS came through and took over because they had the resources available, and they were just going through and just pillaging as much as they can.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of it that we did a poor job of training up the locals to defend themselves. I don't blame ourselves that much either, because that is a major feat to do. You cannot train people who have never done it, who are, you know, 20-something-year-old kids to essentially, hey, you are now the military of this entire region. Good luck.
Yeah.
You know, also, you don't have funding.
Yeah.
Also, you don't have any communications. You're not going to become the same level as us. And that's shown in Jocko Wilkins' book, Complete Ownership, where he talks about how they had to train up the next group of Iraqi soldiers to take over. And they did the best they can. They tried to do it, but it is extremely difficult to do so.
Yeah. Would you say that we pulled out? And I'm not trying to like cast blame or anything on like Obama or anything. I'm just saying, do you think we pulled out too early?
I think that whether we pulled out now or later, it was going to be a problem. Because we can't keep just staying there and try to keep on training and hope. They deemed that it was time for us to get out. And they had reasoning to believe that it was okay. But it didn't work out. Do we say that we spent another 5 years there? Most of us didn't want to be there anymore.
No, I understand the sympathies of not wanting to be there. I didn't even want to be there necessarily. But it was kind of like the idea of like, if you're going to start something, make sure you finish it. And so, the fact that we did enter in there, I felt like we should have saw it through to the end at that point.
There's like no end to see through it, though.
Yeah, there's
you're
no
just
end.
Gonna, you're just going to, like, how long do you want to stay there? There's no like complete objective.
Yeah, the problem with this is not like World War II where there's a goal, there's an objective. There's no end in this, because once we pull out, that team that's staying and defending now has to be defending themselves against attackers for years and years and years. It's essentially the rest of the country's life.
Well, I was gonna say like I would say about a generation's worth, right? Like you need to instill the values that Western values or whatever you want to call it, to the point where radicals can't take over the vacuum once we do leave.
Western values are not the reason why they lost their position. I can tell you that right now. They don't give a fuck what values it is.
Well, no, there's plenty of people who sympathize with the radicals.
No,
right?
they don't sympathize. Then this is straight from, again, Jocko Wilkins, who was in Ramadi. They don't care. The people there don't care whose ideals are in place. What they care about is, are they safe? Their food on the table? Can I have my kids a better future? That is at the end of the day.
Right.
Whether it is with the U.S. soldiers in, because they like that. They love having U.S. soldiers in.
Right.
Because it's had a sense of stability and, I guess, a hope for their kids to be like, hey, they're going to go to school, they're going to be good. They're going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone else takes through, ISIS takes through, U.S. is not there to stop them, or a good team is not there to stop them, they're not switching over to ISIS because they believe in their values more. They're switching over because now, if I don't believe in them, they're going to kill my kids. They're going to rape my daughter, kill me. I'm dead.
Right, but then you have to talk about the fact that there's so many radicals, right? There's obviously people who believe in ISIS and join those forces, right?
I think majority. What if they didn't
have a choice? So you have to. I know there's people who are forced to join ISIS, right? But the point is that there was a large enough people who believed in the radicalism of ISIS where they were able to get enough funding and enough soldiers to create an army that was a force to deal with. Now, that's something that, let's say you instill values, and I'm not going to say, I'll refrain from saying Western or whatever, but just let's just say good values. You instill good values throughout a few generations, and that means the number of radicals rapidly decrease to the point where they aren't a threat anymore, and then we can pull out.
But here now, no, but think about what you just said. For a few generations, let's say someone lives for 70 years now.
Right.
You want us to be there for 140.
That's a generation's like every 20, 25 years.
Every time they have kids.
So you want us to be there for 50 years.
Well, I just threw out a few, but let's just say one generation.
25 years.
Yeah.
And maybe we have to. We stayed in Japan for a long time.
That doesn't mean we have to do it again, though.
But we're not having high influence of Japan. We weren't there governing everything they did.
No, I agree. But we were there keeping stability in the region. And that's what we were suggesting.
Kind of. We have an Okinawa home base right now. But just because we're there doesn't mean we're keeping stability right now.
Well, we had way more, I'm talking, after World War II, for the next 20, 30 years, right? And then eventually we pulled out slowly, slowly. We were less of a presence in that region because as they became more or less radical.
Yeah, but they also had less of threats, too. They didn't have China knocking on their door every day.
Well, China, I mean,
they didn't have North Korea. They had North Korea. Yeah. But they had North Korea had to go to South Korea first.
Right.
So, Japan, yes, I agree with you. That worked for them. But this is not going to be the same case. You have people trying to vie for that position of power. And that's going to be an ongoing basis.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a problem where I think it was a problem where there were still too many people who had radical beliefs that were a threat, and we pulled out too early before we could reduce the number of radicals.
I think the majority of them get pulled into it because they really don't have an option. And I agree with you. There's a good amount that has those radical beliefs and ideals, and that those are what their reasonings for joining ISIS is. Majority, I would say, are still people who either defending themselves, doing what best so they don't get killed, or defending their families. Because even if you don't believe in them,
mm-hmm.
and I put a gun to your head and say, hey, join me, mm-hmm. or you will die right now. Yeah. I will kill your family right now. What are you going to do? I'm not going to be, but Western ideals, those are not your driving factors.
I understand, but the point is there has to be enough people to where that's the idealism of ISIS, right? You can't just say that everyone in ISIS is only doing it because they'll get killed otherwise.
I would say
there's enough people in ISIS who are saying that if you don't follow this radical way of thinking, we're going to kill you.
No, I think I would think like there's a very few people that think that. It's just like the top leaders that think that.
Yeah. Well, no, I disagree because. Like, what percentage are we talking? Are you saying, like, 5% of ISIS is radical and 95%?
More than 50% of ISIS troops are doing it because they really see that there's no other options. And they're doing whether it's best for their self-interest or their families or whatever.
Yeah, so what if it just, like I don't know much about, like, the whole ISIS thing. But in just in general, like rankings, what if it just, like, trickled down? Like, what if there's, like, five generals and these five generals each have like two like commanding whatever lieutenants or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if those two lieutenants, they're the super loyal ones, and then it just trickles down, now there's like three or four people under them, and if they're under threat of death, that's like, hey, recruit these five people or else you're gonna die, you know what they're gonna do, they're gonna recruit more people,
right?
But it's almost like a pyramid scheme, like the top five people, those are the people that have like, you know, really radical ideals that are really down for it.
Mm-hmm.
But if the people under them are under threat of death, like, hey, get five more people, and they're under threat of death, and it keeps on going forward like that, then it's just like, then I can see where Kelly's coming from, where it's like more than half of them are going to be under threat of death that you have to do this, and only a few of them are going to be radicals.
Yeah. I would disagree. I would say it's the other way. I'd say there's more than half that have radical views.
What is your belief?
In general, I would say more than half of the Muslim population have radical beliefs.
Because they have radical beliefs. Well, what is a radical... Well, okay. Because they have radical beliefs in one way, they have to have radical beliefs in this way.
I'm sorry. I went through the Getty, and I saw a bunch of radical beliefs in the fucking Bible. There is a goddamn shit going everywhere.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I
subscribe to it. Well, I'm talking about, like, where they think honor killings are okay, where they think, Sharia law, which I think we can objectively say is a pretty brutal set of laws. is okay. They sympathize with that. So things like that, I would say there's a high percentage of Muslims who sympathize with that kind of ideology. And that's why I was kind of alluding to Western ideals. I'm not saying all Western ideals are ideal, but let's just say, you know, like democracy. Let's just as a general rule of thumb, idea of democracy, of individual rights, everyone is equal. Just let's say those three, that we didn't do a good enough job of instilling those ideals before we pulled out. And so as a result, the radical ideals, the ones that are not good, ran roughshod over.
I think you're,
where more people sympathize with that.
No, I think your umbrella of radical ideals is just like more.
Are the ones that I just listed not radical?
What if they agree
your
with
umbrella,
like
your umbrella of saying that half?
Like if you agree with one part of
but that
Sharia
was, that
law,
was just statistics. Was, you, like when
we
you,
Tom,
into
Tom,
this,
let's
we,
just
we
say
we looked into these statistics before, Tom. Those statistics are cherry picking. I remember I looked went through with you, and they were cherry picking certain populations within certain countries and certain cities. Doing these things.
You're talking about the Pew Research one?
Yeah. We went through it. We talked about this.
I don't think we ever talked about
it. We talked about it on Discord. 100%. Because I remember I was looking through it. And I was like, hey, dude, I got a feeling that this is kind of skewed. Yes, it is going through the Pew Research Board. But you're going through specific cities, surveying maybe 1,000 people, and then saying, this is what I'm drawing from it. Mm-hmm. And then I go to a different country and do the exact same thing. And this is what I'm drawing from it. So I could say 50% of the Muslim population in the Philippines... Complete of Philippines says that they believe in Sharia law. I only surveyed 1,000 people from one city. Technically, I can make that statement. Mm-hmm. Is it true? I don't think so. But at the end of the day, which one is more relatable? If I point a gun to your head right now, says I need you to go kill this group of people over here.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I 100%, I'm not saying that everyone agrees with it. I 100% agree. We're just arguing over percentages. And to me, I would say it's more than 50 rather than less. I would say.
Yes. Again, from Jocko's book, someone who's been there, boots on the ground.
Right.
Worst city, Ramadi was the worst city controlled by, I think, Al-Qaeda during the time.
Right.
Even he says it's not about the religion. It's not about the beliefs. It's about what is going to be best for myself, my family, and their futures. That is what they're fighting for. They don't care who is it coming from because they've already had all these change of powers come in, one and after the next. But they know that if I don't agree with whoever's in power at that time, they will kill my team. They will they will kill my family.
Right.
I can't do anything. I'm going to agree with whoever is there and just try to stay low and survive another day.
Right. That but I'm saying there's enough of radicals where, because to me, it's the idea of like, there's only, let's say, I'll give it even a super conservative number of like 100,000 Nazis, and they take over the country. You know, are all of us going to turn into Nazis all of a sudden? I understand
the idea. Under the penalty of death?
Right.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Right. But the point is that 100,000 Nazis don't have enough power to take over.
They have enough guns to take over.
No, 100,000 people would be easy enough to take out.
This is what happened.
I think 100,000 people in the highest
military positions.
Yeah, if they're in the highest positions and they have the most like power, you know, like with being able to make influence and make decisions, I think 100,000 people could definitely take over millions. 100%.
That's what happened in Germany. They didn't go, they went around and just slowly taking things, little things, little things. And then they get to the point where they're like, hey, that Jewish guy, come to me. Are you going to stand up and tell me no? Hey, you come with me too. Hop in that train. You're going to be okay.
I don't know if you're saying, because like, I remember when you were talking about like, if they believe in Sharia law, what if they only believe in like one part of the law and then the rest that they don't believe in, do you still conclude them as a radical?
I mean, depends which law in particular they agree with.
So you are cherry picking which laws, and if they believe in that law, even if they don't, if they believe in the 1% of the law, but it's the one that you don't agree with, then they're a radical.
Well, it depends on, to be fair on Tom,
yeah,
some of those laws are pretty shit.
Yeah,
and if
yeah.
you believe in that really shitty law,
yeah.
I think that you're
right. I would argue that if you like one other part where it's like, I think in Sharia law says that there should be no interests allowed. I wouldn't call them a radical, right? You know what I mean?
But if they answered, yeah, I believe in Sharia law, that's especially the part that I believe in, then you label them as a radical.
Well, I would broad swath them saying that if they're saying like, I agree with Sharia law, like all or none of it, then you know, but if they say I like one part, you know, then I wouldn't call them, I wouldn't label them as a radical. Right. If they say I like certain parts of it, like these parts, then I wouldn't say that they're a radical. But if they just broad swath say, I agree with Sharia law as a whole, I would consider it a radical, because there are a lot of obviously radical bad things in Sharia law.
Yes, there is. Yeah. But, and what's, for me, what's the point that I 100% disagree with is the whole, if there's 100,000 people.
Yeah, I don't get that either.
If it depends on where they're at. If they are 100,000 people within high levels of, I want to say a government position, or right. I would.
They have influence.
The point is they have to
get up there, right? They have to get into that power. And that's, there needs to be enough people who sympathize with that ideology or whatever to put them into power.
No, they're already empowered to begin with. Not necessarily.
They weren't
like Nazis.
Empowered.
Like Adolf Hitler.
He was democratically elected.
Yeah, he was democratically elected, but he didn't start gassing Jews until he was fully
empowered. Right, but he was talking about how Jews were the fault and that Jews were causing all the problems in Germany. 100%. That was in his speeches. People sympathized with him. But then he took it too far. 100%.
Took it too far, yeah. And do you think that he would still have gone in that same position if he ran on the platform of, we will exterminate the Jews with genocide? Most of the German population didn't know that these camps were going on. They kind of just accepted.
No, that's true. Yeah, no, so that's a good point.
They didn't.
But they were still had a lot of radical beliefs. The Labor Socialist Party had a lot of radical beliefs that people sympathized with. There are still radical beliefs.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
But if there is 100,000 people within a position of power, they could easily switch a government to whatever they want. Easily. And I would say, it's not even have to be all levels of government. If you were in the military power, right? And I think CGP Grey?
Yeah, that's the YouTube channel.
Yeah, he has an amazing video on power in this. And a lot of it comes down to, can you control your military?
I saw that one. It's like the key and the money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a key, right?
The key and the money.
Military is a key. And if you control the military, keep them happy, they will fight for you. Because if you don't keep them happy, guess who has all the guns?
Right.
They're going to turn around and just knock you off and put someone else in. Right. I agree with them. So that it requires a balancing act. I think that if you have 100,000 people that's controlling military, for the most part, you are going to get whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, I'm talking about just before they get control, right? And I think there's...
Tom, even if it's before they get control, like, what if, like, let's say they didn't have control yet, but they're, like, no, they're approaching and they're starting to get control. Would you want to agree with your boss? It's like, hey, you got to agree with me. Like, we're approaching this new thing. We're changing our laws or we're changing whatever. Agree with me? Or, you know, I'm going to kill you. You're fired. You're fired from your job. Now you don't put food on the table.
They're already in power. If I had an employee, if we had an employee where, you know, there's five employees and one guy's spouting out hardcore changes to the policies, and then we're having an election on who's going to be the next boss. I'm not going to pick that guy.
The boss is already there. He's a good boss. No, let's say he's a good boss.
Right.
He's a good boss. He hasn't changed his ideals yet. He's not radical in the sense. He's just a good boss. He's doing his thing, right?
Right.
But now, like, he starts looking at these ideals, and he's a person in power, and he turned radical.
Then, in that sense, I agree. Once they are in full power, I'm 100%. In that belief, but I am saying that in order for them to have gotten into power, we're bringing back to ISIS. They never changed their ideology. They never were moderates and became radical. They were always radicals. And enough people sympathized with them that they became powerful enough to the point where the people couldn't fight against them.
Or enough people were forced into their armies or killed. Simple as that. They walked through with guns, plowed your village down. Either join me or die.
Yeah.
And they did that enough times where it's not about voting anymore. Because we own the vote. Doesn't matter what the hell you think. And we see that happen in a bunch of other places. Russia, for example. Venezuela. Great example. That was a funny one.
Yeah, that's a big...
Venezuela. We have a bunch of areas where you could say that someone runs and you don't see the full extent of their ideals. That they could hide under and say like, hey, no, I'm not a huge fan. I think a lot of change needs to happen. Mm-hmm. Right? All these things need to happen. They get into position. Oh, shit. Hitler wants to genocide these people? I didn't know that.
Yeah, how big
I can't object now.
How big is Saudi Arabia, by the way?
Huge.
It's huge, right? So what I'm thinking is, like, it's not, is it as big as Texas? Couple states, eastern,
more
big. Eastern Texas. Here in Texas, but maybe like a couple more states on
half of the
Texas.
Half the U.S. Maybe a little less. Okay, so what I'm thinking,
third, I'll say third.
Okay, let's say the third of the U.S. Right, and if like there, I don't think that they have like as many communication channels as I'm assuming. I don't know. I'm assuming that there's still like villages. I'm assuming that there's still like places like small cities.
There's all sorts of things, large cities.
Yeah, large gaps. Right. So if what Kelly's saying is true, where like, you know, some people didn't know that some stuff was happening, you know, it's like, oh wait, shit, like Hitler's gassing Jews. We didn't know that, you know, we just like thought whatever we just like heard. I don't know if they have the same communication channels as us where news travels just as fast. I don't know if they're restricting the internet or anything. Mm-hmm. What I'm thinking is like, if the main group, like the capital city, that's where all the stuff's happening, and there's all these outlier cities, and they're just like, you know, they're just going with the flow, and they didn't know. And if like those few radicals that had all the power in the capital city, and then now they started moving around and going to all these like towns that didn't know what was going on, and then they started like, you know, trying to get them to be soldiers and stuff under threat of death, and it's like, wouldn't that be possible?
And it's the same thing with the Nazi regime and how we handled it afterwards. Who did we blame? We didn't blame the soldiers for gassing the Jews. Some did, 100%. Some we did.
Yeah.
But on the whole, it was high-level command. Because soldiers always said, like, I'm just doing my job. I need to get home.
Well, of course you're going to say that when you're under the threat of...
But that is... But let's that talk... Is, but that is, again, the most... That's the same thing even our soldiers say. Why do they do their things they do now? They, most Medal of Honors, and I think there's a great side note... Great Netflix documentary.
Oh, yeah. I heard that's coming out soon.
Yeah. Talking about Medal of Honors.
And, yeah. Like stories of Medal of Honors.
And they're kind
of
like...
We have a title?
I don't know. I think that should be called Medal of Honor.
Okay.
Yeah. But they have like live action and the person retelling it. The common consensus between these people, and you know, it comes up in those Medal of Honor recipients. They come up in like the 101st Airborne. Jocko Wilkins in squad team, SEAL team 6, SEAL team 5. They always do it for their fellow soldiers. They do it for themselves to get home to their family. It's not about ideals. A lot of times, soldiers are influenced by just, I need to get out of here, I need to get home, or I just need to get this done. I need to get this objective done. That is what goes on their mind. They don't say, I need to spread freedom. It is a big part of it. Let's not lie.
A lot of people join for that reason, yeah.
A lot of people join, I would say, more so for the benefits of military, where they don't have
a... Yeah, no, I'm not even saying that's a small minority at all. Yeah. I would say there's a good chunk of people who join for monetary, or they just have nowhere else to go.
I think, yes, it's good that you have those ideals and principles, but if I were to ask them, did you do it for your soldier, your fellow soldier next to you? Did you ran through all that fire to pull that guy out? Because you cared about him, or because you care about individual freedom, and that's what you're doing, why you're there. Yeah. Most people would be like, I pulled him out because he's my friend, man. I don't, like, it's not about freedom, it's not about this, it's not about these ideals and the Constitution of America. It's about, I need to pull my friend out, I don't want him dying.
Yeah.
And that's the same kind of mindset that I would apply to the enemy.
Right.
The enemy, quote unquote, right? Anybody who's out there being a soldier. They do it because they are pushed against a wall to a position where either they agree to go with whatever's happening or they will die.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you right now, I would have to be like, I need to fight. I need to live. I got reasons to live.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to die here. I can hide it. I can hide my ideologies.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if I believe them. Just give me time to get out of here.
Right.
Maybe.
I almost feel like that's kind of like the Maslow's like hierarchy of needs. Like when you're in the moment, you know, it's like you don't have time to think about like pride and ambition and stuff. You're just trying to, I'm just trying to survive right now.
Yeah.
If I'm in a firefight, the last thing I'm thinking about is like, oh man, I better kill this guy so the guy back home can, you know, have his rights to do, like, you know, the first 10 minutes or whatever. I'm going to kill this guy because I got to save my buddy. I got to do my thing.
No, I like I said, I agree. I'm not saying that's not the case for a good number of people. I would even almost fight to say it's 50-50, like for every other soldier. But I would definitely not say it's a minority. Like the people who actually hold those beliefs, like, again, if you take away the gun from their head, I would still say a large chunk of them would be.
You said 50-50 for the U.S. Why can't it be 50-50 for ISIS?
What? What do you mean?
You were like, I believe that 50% of the people will do it because...
Oh, no, I said 50 for ISIS. Oh. Yeah. Saying 50 for ISIS. I'm saying I would give it 50-50. I would never say it's a minority who are doing it because they actually hold those radical beliefs.
Yeah, I think. Even if you say it's 50-50, then you still have a very valid argument to say that it's not about the ideologies.
But I would say it's not about the ideologies. I'd say it's 50-50, right? There's,
I agree, and
I say that there's a they have a large enough influence. And so what I'm saying is, let's say you go into that region and you tamp, you start controlling and stabilizing the region, and then you reduce the number of radicals from 50% to 25%. Then you reduce that to 10%. Then you reduce that to 5%. Then 1%. And then you leave. Chances are that 1% is not going to roll back to 50.
Yeah, but now you have 50 years, 75 years passed.
Mm-hmm.
You're
and then, but then again, the amount of influence that's necessary once it's from 50 to 25, it's less influence needed. We need to be in there less.
Again,
less
influence. Look at the city of Ramadi where Wyatt became and fell into ISIS. Right. We were there and we held a large majority of it. There's a huge amount of
my point is why isn't it that when we ran roughshod through, destroyed all the armies, whatever, do everything, that when we leave, a vacuum come and they all come back? It's because a large enough people were radicalized enough, seeking
power. So there's a vacuum in the space of power.
And so we
whatever ideology.
Then we're playing, then let's play percentage game, right? Let's play percentage game. The number of people, there's a certain number of people who want to find power. 50% of them are radical. There's a good chance that a radical power is going to come to power versus, let's say it's a 1%. There's a 99% chance a non-radical power is going to come to power. That's what I'm trying to say.
Radical power is more extreme and will wipe you
out. Yeah, so Tom, well, I want to go back to the boss example real quick, okay? So when you're talking about, like, man, if there's five people and no one's the boss yet because no one's in power yet,
right.
I'm not going to vote for the guy that's radical. He's crazy. You know, I'm going to vote for the other guy. I'm going to vote for the big one.
He goes through and just
now this guy comes in. It's an office of five people, right? Now this guy comes in. Now he comes into the office with a gun, and he's like, I will kill all of you if you don't believe in me. And it's not a big village. There's only five people in an office, right? And I'm gonna kill you five people if you don't believe in me, right? And then no one else has, like, since they're not that radical, you know, let's say that they don't have the guts to do it, or let's say that they don't have they just don't want to die, right? They're just thinking of themselves, but they don't want to overthrow the guy because they think that if they overthrow the guy, someone's gonna die. Like, if we try and overthrow this one guy, two of us are gonna die. I don't want to be the guy that dies because nobody wants to be the guy that dies, right? Let's say this is the 1%. This is the 1% dude, and 99% is not radical, right? Now this 1% dude, he quote unquote converted four people under threat of death, right? Now you have 5%, and now that keeps going. And he's like, "All right, find me two more people, and if you don't, then I'm killing you. You're my lieutenant now."
I totally get what you're saying. But I would say it's not a great.
No one's in power yet.
Yeah, I know, but it's not a great example because then you're assuming that the other four people are weak, and I don't necessarily think that's the case, right? We're talking about people who want power,
right.
But have the right view. So they all have a gun. Let's just put it that way. They all have a gun. Just one guy has the radical views. Right.
The guy with the radical view
is going to shoot the gun.
Let's just say we're the, you know, US is one of the, I would say, good guys who has a gun too. Like, we are just as powerful, right? The point is,
not going to go across to a country and just start bombing the shit out of them.
Yeah.
Straight up.
Well, no, like, of course
we
not.
We would have to have some type of cause for it to happen.
Right.
The cause would be us getting shot first.
Yeah.
Typically.
Yeah. No, that's my point. What I'm trying to say is that when you have more radicals in a vacuum, there's a higher chance that the radicals come to power. When you stay long enough, and I agree, the number can be pretty large. When you stay long enough where you reduce the number of radicals down, you have a much better shot of keeping a stabilization in the region. I guess that's my end point. I will concede, though, because you guys do have a really good point on how radicals can control a large portion just through, like, threat of death.
Yeah,
I will agree with that more so.
How they want to operate, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, imagine if you have four guys, it's like, no, I don't want to do this. I want to have a nice debate. I want to vote. I want to talk about our values. We're going to have a nice conversation.
You're going to get stomped under.
And yeah, then you have this one guy who's like, no, I'm going to fuck you up. And then the other guy's like, no, we're not radicals. We're going to have a good conversation. You know, I don't know if they're going to fight back.
You're assuming they're all sheep. I would say you need to have four herding dogs against the one wolf. Right?
What was wrong with my guns example in the office?
Well, whatever. Okay. Well, we're almost out of time here. So we'll end it on that. Thanks for stopping in.
Thanks for tuning in, guys.
We'll talk to you guys after our two weeks break.
Yeah, we'll try to make a habit of.
I appreciate y'all.
Yeah. We'll have to try making a habit of making
sure we're. Talk to you guys next time.
Have a good week, guys.
See you later.